How do we live when life is difficult? When things fall apart? Some people go to philosophy, some people go to scripture, some people go to poetry. One place I go is J.R.R. Tolkien's classic story, The Lord of the Rings. In today's episode, how these stories became so much more than a fantasy escape for me. What they have to say about the role of all stories in our lives. And the inspiration that I find for living through the times that we are in. This is I Heart This, everyone. I'm Ben Lord. Let's talk about what we love. In the fall semester of 2021, teaching was impossible. The isolation of the pandemic had been lonely, but it was nothing compared to the chaos of coming back to school. Students would scarcely talk to each other in person, but seemed incapable of turning off their phones. High school kids would buckle and claim mental exhaustion after writing a single paragraph. And dysregulated kids shouted obscenities in the hallway while our security officers patiently waited for them to calm down. Vandals flooded toilets and ripped mirrors off the bathroom walls. At our faculty meetings, we talked about rebuilding a school culture. But it was a joke. Holding a field day or some socially distanced pep rally wasn't going to fix this. I was hopelessly outmatched by the scope of my work and throttled by one emergency after another. Then, one fateful day in late October, I looked up from trying to cajole a student to put something, anything, on their paper, only to see that not a single person in the classroom was doing the assignment. Not one. It was like a nightmare teaching scenario out of a movie. Even in the miserable depths of my first year teaching, I'd never seriously considered quitting. But I did that day. I was making no difference to anyone, and I could see no path forward. That night, instead of planning a new lesson, I sat morosely on the couch. My family had been watching the Lord of the Rings movies, and feeling the futility of doing anything else, I agreed to watch with them, even though it was a school night. I had seen them several times before, of course, but that night I was swept up in a way that I'd never been before or since. The utter hopelessness of the characters' situations felt so much like my own. It was the Two Towers, so the Fellowship had been broken, Merry and Pippin had been captured, King Theoden of Rohan had watched his country pillaged by monsters, its villages burning, its people turned into refugees. And now, holed up in Helm's Deep, the final stronghold of his country, the walls were breached by a monstrous army, and they were about to be overrun. The people huddled in caves, trying to console their frightened children, while the battering rams of their enemies buckled the doors of the keep. And Theoden, despairing, asks out loud, "What can men do against such reckless hate?" I've never been in so much as a fistfight in my life, but that night I knew the king's despair. I knew his helplessness. And tears welled up in my eyes because his question was the one playing over and over in my mind about my chaotic school. What can anyone possibly do? What can I do? My question and Theoden's were the same. And so when Aragorn, Ranger of the North, answered, it cut directly to my own heart. "Ride out and meet them," he said. The enemy hordes were so numerous they looked like a boiling swarm of insects. Theoden knew it was suicide, but he looked Aragorn in the eye, and you could see the resolve returning, and he said, "For death and glory. The horn of Helm Hammerhand will sound in the deep one last time." And right there, I knew what I was being called to do. I didn't know whether it would make any difference to go back into the classroom tomorrow and try again to inspire some teenagers to care about science or each other or even themselves. But I did know that I would rather be the one who dared to ride out and meet them than the one who remained huddled in the keep. When I was 11 years old, I found my dad's old, musty-smelling boxed set of J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings on some shelves in the garage. It took me 3 tries and 4 years to finish reading them. I'm not the only person who struggled through them. Tolkien was a passionate student of Old English, and in many ways, his writing is reminiscent of Beowulf. His voice is formal, his prose is full of long discursive passages, and longer interludes of lore and song interrupt the story. But that didn't mean that I didn't love it. For a good portion of my early teens, I was obsessed with the details and mysteries of Middle-earth. I loved the meticulous world-building and the hints at mysterious histories that never get fully explained, and the enduring themes of good and evil, and the fact that he invented several languages to write it, complete with their own grammars and scripts, and the fact that he had single-handedly recreated the genre that we now call fantasy. But mostly, I loved the vibe. I wanted to live in Middle-earth. A place with its own problems, to be sure, but ones so different from the actual loneliness and insecurities of my own life. Inspired by Lord of the Rings, I became an avid player of Dungeons and Dragons and spent long hours rolling dice and dreaming of what it might be like to have the magic and the wisdom of a wizard like Gandalf the Grey. In an article for The Guardian many years ago called Why I Hate Lord of the Rings, John Dennis writes, "You won't find many fans of Tolkien working to make the real world a better place. They're just too nerdy to participate in real life." And while it might not be flattering to admit, I won't deny that he wasn't far off the mark for me. The shy and nerdy kid I was often found the real world too confusing and too difficult to bear. And in fantasy, I could have the strength and courage and certainty that I never seemed to be able to muster in the painfully real halls of junior high school. I really did read The Lord of the Rings to escape. But escape is not the only thing to be found in those pages. Today, I find myself returning to them for something else, for the resolve and courage to meet the seemingly impossible challenges of the real world. Whereas a kid I saw mostly swords and sorcery, I now see themes of loss and homesickness and companionship. Where before I saw heroes and chivalry, I now see characters full of all too human doubts and fears. Where before I saw monsters, I now see analogies to the everyday fears and impossible challenges of a regular human life. Like Frodo, my own times are beset by a darkness threatening the home that I love, and forces so powerful it seems inevitable that they will win. Like Frodo, I often feel like the only chance that the free peoples have of success is to unite in common cause, but such an alliance seems impossible in the light of their histories of mutual mistrust and petty betrayals. And like Frodo says to Gandalf in The Fellowship of the Ring, I feel uselessly small, wishing that these shadows need not have happened in my time. And Gandalf's counsel seems so relevant when he replies, so do I, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. And that is why I still read The Lord of the Rings today, because it gives me insight into how to live in dark and difficult times, how to decide what to do with the time that is given me. Tolkien would be the first to say that he wasn't writing with any kind of moral in mind. While he himself lived in difficult times, and while he composed much of the story during World War II, he vociferously denied that The Lord of the Rings was an allegory. Still, he did hope that his readers would find in it something applicable to their lives. At the end of The Two Towers, when Sam and Frodo are stuck in the precipitous stairs of Cirith Ungol, trying to sneak into Mordor, the heart of darkness itself, Frodo laments that everything in their path seems cursed. And Sam answers, we shouldn't be here at all if we'd known more about it before we started. But I suppose it's often that way. The brave things in the old tales and songs, Mr. Frodo, adventures, as I used to call them. I used to think they were things the wonderful folk of the stories went out and looked for because they wanted them, because they were exciting and life was a bit dull, a kind of a sport, as you might say. But that's not the way of it with the tales that really mattered, or the ones that stay in the mind. Folks seem to have been just landed in them, usually. Their paths were laid that way, as you put it, but I expect they had lots of chances, like us, of turning back. Only they didn't. And Frodo said, "That's the way of a real tale. You may know or guess what kind of a tale it is, happy ending or sad ending, but the people in it don't know." When I was young and wanted to escape from a suburb where I had few friends, I missed the power of this passage. Like Sam, I really thought of adventures and adventure stories as antidotes to what was dull and meaningless. But in this passage, Tolkien risks putting us readers out of the story trance to explicitly point out what the story is doing and what it is for. I watch Sam and Frodo almost playfully thinking of themselves as heroes, something I, as a reader, can so clearly see that they are. And I can see the light of hope that it gives them. So powerful is that light that even in Mordor, even weighted down by the ring, Frodo laughed a long, clear laugh from his heart. Such a sound that had not been heard in that place since Sauron came to Middle-earth. And to Sam, suddenly it seemed as if all the stones were listening. The tales that really matter, matter because they are windows onto ourselves. They make me mindful just for a moment that I am living a story too, and they put me in the hero's place. And I step into their courage and simultaneously see my own. When I find something beautiful in the hero's courage in those tales, I can see how beautiful that same courage might also be in mine. In the climactic scene of The Lord of the Rings, Sam and Frodo are spent. Everything hangs in the balance, and everything hangs on them. The only ones who can save the world are the smallest people in it, like it does in the real world right now, and like it always has. Frodo, weighted down by his burden, cannot go on. There is no one who understands how the ring has hollowed him out and left him empty, not even Sam. Like our anxieties and our despairs, and our addictions, and our pains, no one can carry Frodo's burden for him. He is utterly alone at the end of the world. And most painful of all, Sam knows it. Sam, who loves Frodo, who has always loved Frodo, who would have gladly given his life for him, can do nothing to relieve the burden. And so he does the only thing he can. He pulls Frodo onto his back and carries him. Every story ends with a climactic choice, where the hero must face his greatest fear, see with true insight, and decide to sacrifice his old self to become something new. But when they finally arrive at the cracks of Mount Doom, Frodo fails. There, overlooking the yawning pit of fire, instead of dropping the ring into the flame, Frodo claims it as his own. The eye of Sauron turns upon him and all seems lost. The ring is only destroyed because of the mercy they have shown to the deceitful creature Gollum, who had tried to kill them several times and nearly succeeded, who betrays them once again, bites the finger and the ring from Frodo's hand, and tumbles into the pit with it. So if this is a tale that matters, what does it have to say? How do I deal with the dark times? Stuck with burdens I didn't choose to bear, and in dark days I wish had never come. Well, we ride out and meet them. for death and glory. Despite the impossible odds, we hold true to our friends and forgive them when they fail, as all of us will someday. And when we cannot walk on our own, we carry each other. Dear friends, thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode, leave a comment, tell folks what you liked. Subscribe on YouTube, there's a link in the description, or wherever you get your podcasts, and send this episode to a favorite Hobbit fan. Those things will only take a second, but they really help us to spread our message of appreciation and thanks. I Heart This is written, edited, and produced by me, Ben Lord. Our logo was designed by Brian Imaro Cribbs. Our website is iheartthispodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook at iheartthispodcast or email us at ben@iheartthispodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be kind, be curious, and be thankful.